So, and we're going to welcome a new guest, a guest who has not been on the show before, and we have a pleasure to have her in the studio, Dr. Ksonia Wise Whitehead. Good to have you here.
Thank you so much. Please just call me Kay.
Kay, and yes. Kay is Assistant Professor of Communications and Affiliate Assistant Professor of African and African American Studies at Loyola University, Maryland. Good to have you in the studio.
I'm so excited to be here today talking about Harriet Tubman. This is going to be a very interesting discussion.
Araminta Ross.
Yes, and that's how she began. I mean, you're talking Dorchester County, Eastern Shore of Maryland. That's where she was born, about 1820, 1821, as Araminta Ross. And from Araminta Ross, we've come all the way to Harriet Tubman Davis, and it's exciting to think about her life in the middle of that. I mean, she took upon her mother's name, Harriet, and they're saying somewhere in her teenage years, she decided to change her name from Araminta to Harriet. And to me, that was an act of agency, an act of claiming and becoming who you are, and that's how she saw herself. At about the age of 24, and we know these stories, but what I think is interesting before I go into kind of outlining Harriet Tubman's life is that when we talk about Black history, there are the big three that everyone has learned about Harriet Tubman. Everyone's learned about Frederick Douglass, and everyone's learned about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. We can add the fourth in there, of course, our president that we talk about
Barack
when we look
Obama.
At Black history. Mm-hmm. So we know a lot about Harriet Tubman. She was the one woman who was kind of in that hall of fame when you learned about Black history coming through elementary school and middle school. So these are facts that we're familiar with. We know she was Araminta Ross. We know that around the age of 24, 25, she either coupled by choice or she was married against her will to John Tubman. But we also know that there was another act of agency for her because she took on his last name. Even though he was a free man, she changed her name from Harriet Ross to Harriet Tubman. Like, that was very important to her. That was that claiming. They were married for about 5 years and she wanted freedom. There was something out there beyond where she was, and she could see herself becoming free. And she made that decision to run. And even though John Tubman did not go with her, she made the decision to go anyway, by herself.
Right.
I think that is absolutely fascinating when you think about it.
And they made a decision as she wandered her way through the swamps and of the Eastern Shore to make it to the north, as she
yes.
wanted to do, as thousands of others had done before her.
Yes.
Not to stay there, but to go back.
And I
think this was the thing, to go back and free other people.
When I think about Harriet Tubman, and this weekend we were at the University of Albany celebrating the 100th celebration for Harriet Tubman, and it was thinking about
which is near where she passed away.
Yes, it's the 100th, anniversary of her death. Because we don't know exactly what year she was born, 1820 or 1821. But the things that we talked about this weekend is the three big questions. Thinking about what would Harriet Tubman do when she looked around at the situation today? What would Harriet Tubman say when she looked at the state of African-American people in America? And then what did Harriet Tubman leave behind? I think one of the things, as you think about her spirit, what it must have took for her to go all the way to the North, to make her way to freedom by herself,
right.
And then decide to come back. And her first decision, of course, was to come back for her sister. A year later, in 1850, she came back. She got her sister's husband, and her two nieces or nephews, and took them back up to North. Now, that was in December 1850. By 1851, she was coming back down again to get her brother.
So what do we know about Harriet Tubman and her later life, post-slavery, into the 20th century when she died?
Yes.
At the time of the battles between George Washington Carver and W.E.B. Du Bois.
Yes.
The very famous kind of confrontations between those two men.
Yes.
And where she was in all of this. I mean, because I remember, she was such a bridge, I mean, from the period of John Brown, who called her the general, to...
Yes.
To passing away, when segregation was, having lived through the liberation of slavery, through the institution of segregation, and to the kind of burgeoning of this Black Power movement of the early 20th century.
Which is amazing. One of the ways I think about Harriet Tubman, I look at her from being a militant outlaw to a maternal savior. That she came through a period when she had, this bond on her head, about $40,000. And when you do a dollar for dollar the match, that's about $680,000. And in 1861, you're talking after 11 years of going back and forth between the North and the South, after 19 trips, she did join up. And I think it's important to know that she volunteered to work with the Union soldiers down in South Carolina. I I mean, she worked as a nurse, as a cook, and she was kind of a soldier because she's the first woman to ever lead soldiers into battle. That was the Combahee River Collective. And we're celebrating the 150th anniversary of that this year, which is in June, of course, of 1863. So she worked then. I mean, she was going along. She worked as a soldier after having, of course, been a militant outlaw. And then when the war ended, she moved up to Auburn, New York. And you would think after all the work, after the walking, after the miles, after all the people she had fought to get free, that she would probably sit down and rest, but she did not. She joined up, interestingly enough, with Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton, and she began to work for the women's rights movement. And that's a little known fact about her, that she was actively involved in trying to push the suffrage movement forward. So here she is going into her 60s and her 70s and her 80s, and she's still very active. She also chooses to get married again. She marries a young man who's a little bit younger than her. He was a veteran, and she met him in South Carolina, and she took upon his name. So she became Harriet Tubman Davis. Now, there's a lot of conversation that perhaps she married him so she could get a pension, because there are all these letters and documents where she was trying to get the money that was owed to her having worked in the Civil War. She was only receiving about $5 per month, whereas other veterans were receiving $25 per month. When she did get married, because of her husband, and once he passed away, she was able to get that raise to $20 a month. And she took every dollar and every dime she had and put it back into whatever cause she was working on. I mean, she was opening up schools. She was focused on the literacy, raising those rates, because even though she could not read or write, she knew it was important. And I think that is fascinating, that she lived to 1913.
Right.
She was able to see our nation come through. You're talking the Civil War where she was born. You're talking coming through Reconstruction. You're talking by 1913, we're coming out of Reconstruction. And you see this birth of this new black community. And you're talking to W.E.B. Du Bois. You're talking this black renaissance that's happening that she was able to see with her own eyes.
Was she honored by them when she passed? People like Du Bois and others?
Yes. Well, she was actually not just honored by people stateside. She had received the medal from the Queen Victoria of England when she turned 60 years old. She was honored throughout the country. And I think that one of the problems with Harriet Tubman, as we look back and we think about her place in history, I think she's overlooked. I think that she's a lot more complicated than we make her out to be. And I don't think she's the only one. I think when you think of heroes, you tend to freeze them in a moment. We think of King and the March on Washington. We think of Frederick Douglass, of course, and his big movement and how he ran away to be free. We think of Harriet Tubman running away and helping people to get free. We forget that she had so much more to her life beyond the Civil War. And she was very active, and she was someone who claimed her own space. One of the first feminists that I like to walk in her path, because I think she blazed a trail. I mean, she left a lot for us to live up to.
And I think that it's so important when we talk about people like Harriet Tubman that we do not just kind of get stuck, as you said, in her pre-Civil War and Civil War world.
Right.
Because she never stopped. And I think that's why I was asking questions about what happened to her kind of later in life. I mean, what she became and who and what she represented. And I think that, you know, the amazing just thing about it, she died in 1913. She lived that entire expanse.
That's a long time.
Of liberation, resegregation, and fighting for rights. What she was there from the beginning to the end.
And I think that's fascinating. I was listening to your show, because I listen to your show often. And this weekend I was thinking, you know, if we were to bring Harriet Tubman back, and of course you know you can't, okay, just assume with me, listeners, for just a moment, that we could ask her, like, what does she think when she looks out at what's happening across this nation, and she looks at the issues that are facing the African-American community, and she looks at what's happening in the schools and what's happening with drugs, I feel she would be very disappointed. Remember, she put her life on the line to get people to freedom. And we've turned around and we have a different type of enslavement that's facing us now. Now we're talking about academic enslavement. Now we're talking about, you know, black on black violence. But a lot of these issues, I wonder if she would be disappointed with us, because we have all of these problems that we can't seem to get past. And I struggle with that. Having worked as a former teacher here in Baltimore City for 4 years and seeing that firsthand before I call myself escaping to academia, but working on the front lines. And wondering, what can I do in the spirit of Harriet Tubman to change the reality for the young people that I'm working with?
Who took down her words?
Well, there were all these reporters, primarily white reporters, who would listen to her speak and they would take her words down. And that's one of the problems with Harriet Tubman when we say that she's been silenced, because she could not write. There's nothing in her own hand. Unlike Frederick Douglass, who learned how to write. So his story stands as a finished piece in his own hand.
Right.
So you can't really debate that because he wrote that. And he wrote a number of autobiographies, right? I think there were four in total, but she did not. So Sojourner Truth either. These are women who could not read or write. So their lives and their stories have been recorded by others' hands. So did she actually say when she crossed over into freedom that I looked at my hands and my hands looked new and I looked at my feet and they did too? We don't know. I mean, these are words that were taken down by reporters that sound good. But whether or not it's what happened, we don't know. So I think we look at that and we try to realize what her experience might have been. I don't think that we truly could ever understand. I mean, I have a problem sometimes walking from my house to Loyola, which is about 5 miles. So I can't even imagine walking to freedom and realizing that that first time she ran away, she did not have any idea where she was going.
Well, Harriet Tubman, I think both a mirror and a lamp for all of us.
Yes, absolutely.
And I'm so happy. Even though it's a brief introduction to Mark Steiner Show, it won't be the last time I'll be here. I'll be here many times in the future.
I hope not.
Kay Wise Whitestead is Assistant Professor of Communication and Affiliate Assistant Professor of African and African American Studies at Loyola University of Maryland. Pleasure to meet you. Thank you for coming to the studio, and I look forward to you joining us again.
Thank you. I look forward to being on the show again. I have a lot of resources about Harriet Tubman on my website at kwisewhitehead.com. I invite people to go get them so they can use them in their classrooms.
And we will link to that.
Yes, thank you.
On the way to our next segment, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. For the fifth year in a row, Maryland's public schools have been named number one in the country by Education Week magazine. Visit MarylandEducators.org to explore what it means to invest in our students, school construction and safety, and the educators' programs and services that make our schools a national leader. That's MarylandEducators.org. We'll take a break. When we come back from this break, we'll be joined by Dave Zirin and Ali Danois to talk about money in sports, what's happening with the Ravens, and beyond that. Stay with us. We'll be right back.